Am I turned on?
Yeah. Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Anna Healy Fenton. I'm the president of the FCC. You're all very welcome today. Now, I'm sure many of you were here when Tony Tyler gave one of his many farewell speeches a few months ago. So this time we're delighted to welcome what he describes rather self-effacingly as the Swire Group's experiment with employing an American many years ago in 1980. Well, I think not only has he proved them right, but he's worked his way all around the Swire Group and now ends up as CE, I gather not O anymore, CE of Cathay Pacific Airways. Now, the subject today, as you all know, is the third runway, so I won't preempt the debate on that. Just a little bit of housekeeping. On the 5th of September, we've got the Professor of Economics from Yale University, Dean Carlin, talking about whether or not anti-poverty programs really work. So please all come along to that. That's a lunch speech. Now, today, the format will be same as usual. John will talk to us, and then we will have a question and answer session, and feel free to ask your questions. So, ladies and gentlemen, John Slosser.
Excellent. Good afternoon, everybody. And Anna, thanks very much for that kind introduction. I'm very pleased to have a chance to come today to speak about the expansion of the airport because I think personally it's a very important subject. I think it has significant implications for the future of Hong Kong, and therefore I think a free and fair debate on the topic is a good one, and I know there's no better place to have a free and fair debate than there is here at the FCC. So we are now about 1 month into the 3 month consultation period, which I, obviously, being an interested party, have been watching with great interest. And actually, I don't know whether you'll agree with me, and I'd like to hear some comments later, but I think it's actually been quite a good debate. I think there's been a lot of say from different quarters. I think people who have an interest in various aspects of the development of aviation, development of lots of things, have had a chance to have their say. And that's good, frankly, on balance. I think that's a fantastic thing. So what I would like to do today is to make some of my own points, but also to comment on some points that others have made, and I've brought along some clippings from various notes that have been written. And I'm going to try my very best to keep the comments in context, because I think that's fair. But I would also like to try to focus on those things which I think are facts and which we can rely heavily on when we think about this important decision ahead of us, and those things which really aren't so much facts, but really ideas or other things, or in some cases, I think, just myths, because they're really not true. So let me crack right on. And I think, first of all, fact number one is really that when we talk about the third runway, calling it the third runway project, I think is actually a bit of a misleading term, because it's about a lot more than just a third runway. Obviously, a third runway is part of it, but you're talking about a completely new check-in facility, terminal. You're talking about new gates of the same size as the current ones almost. You're talking about a train connecting all of them. You're talking a lot about all the associated stuff that would go with a bigger airport. So somehow calling it just a third runway debate, I think, undervalues the scope of the whole exercise. So I've been calling it really the airport expansion plan, because I think that's a fairer rendition of what you're really talking about. And let's talk a little bit about, you know, the case itself. I mean, why would we want to think about expanding the Hong Kong airport? The obvious reason is it's going to get full before some point in the future. I'll come back to that in a minute. But I think there are some important facts here. And I think the most important fact is that I think the airport itself is a very important support for and contributor to the Hong Kong economy. I think that now, and I think it will continue to be the case in the future. Now, let me support this assertion with what I think are some clear facts. Fact number one is, if you look at the four pillars of the Hong Kong economy, which is financial services, professional services, which are largely in support of financial services, trading and logistics, tourism, you know, all of these industries are international industries. I mean, none of them are domestic industries. They all somehow involve connectivity between Hong Kong and other places. And I think in that case, are supported by very much by aviation. And in the case of most of them, it's impossible to think of them as being not only pillar industries, but industries at all here without the connectivity that aviation brings. I mean, how could you have trading and logistics somehow without aviation? How could you have financial services the way we have them now without aviation connecting the main financial hubs of the world, of which Hong Kong is now one of the majors? So I think that is a fact. A second fact I would cite in support of this is that, you know, the current Hong Kong airport, I think, has been nothing but a tremendous success. It is one of the highest regarded passenger airports in the world. It is the biggest international hub of Asia. In cargo terms, it is the biggest cargo airport in the world. Stanley is very frequently on stage receiving all sorts of awards for what a good job they've done. And that's an important thing because, and I'm going to come to it in a minute, when we look at the current airport and the expansion of it, this is not a completely new project that's untried. What we are doing is we're investing in an established success. And I think when one looks at an investment, certainly as a business person, investing in something that's already working pretty well is always a lot easier decision than investing in something that's new and untried. So I think very strongly there's a case to say, look, we are investing behind clearly an existing success and trying to make it better. The third fact I would cite is that, you know, the Hong Kong International Airport does return a better than a 5% return on its investment. Now, even my friend Jake Vanderkamp, who's not here to defend himself, has had to admit that in print. And I know that it pained Jake tremendously to write that line. But the airport has turned out to be a successful investment. Now, it's not surprising that it took a while to get there because, you know, in any sort of big capital investment, use of the capacity is a key part of the return. And you will never build a new airport that's going to be full on day one. So it took some time for the use of the facility to generate the revenues needed to generate the return. But guess what? It is there now, and I think that's a huge success, which I don't think has been mentioned very much in the debate up till now. And I think it's an important piece of the debate to bring out. So I think it's a myth that it was a bad investment. Those of us with very long memories or who are old enough to remember, in the early 90s, when the whole infrastructure debate was going on pre-1997 about building the new airport and the bridges and the train and everything, there was great concern at that point about the size and scope of the investment and about whether it would ever really work and justify itself. I clearly think 13 years post-1997, it's obvious that that whole infrastructure plan was a great investment, you know, and has greatly underpinned the development of Hong Kong since that time. And I think as we think about the airport going forward, that's the context we need to have. Another fact, I think, is that, you know, aviation and connectivity, you know, the connectivity of being a hub, creates jobs in Hong Kong and creates jobs for Hong Kong people going forwards. Aviation itself is responsible for about 250,000 jobs in Hong Kong. Hong Kong has 3,500 corporate or regional headquarters based here that employ about 140,000 people as well. And these are good jobs. These are white-collar jobs in people adding value. They're largely service jobs, but these are good jobs. And in fact, in talking to Invest Hong Kong, interest in coming to Hong Kong now is at an all-time high. And that's an interesting fact, too, because it shows that what we're doing now is working. Another interesting fact, I think, about the jobs that are created in this way are that a lot of the jobs are jobs for young people. You know, most of the jobs that we have in Cathay Pacific that we offer each year are really for 18 to 25-year-olds. They're flight attendants positions, they're positions at the airport. We'll be hiring something like 3,000 to 4,000 staff a year over the next couple of years, and most of those will be entry-level jobs. And I think when you look around the world, you know, one of the prime sources of discontent, I would say, in societies is not having jobs for young people to get into the labor force. And I think aviation certainly, you know, aids very much that problem. So the big fact for me out of all this is that actually the Hong Kong model works, and it works pretty well. Okay, and aviation supports it, and all these industries together have really generated a successful economic model. And if you doubt this, all I would say is look at all the other places around Asia and even around the world that are trying to copy what we've been doing here and trying to somehow get on the same virtuous path of growth. So I think when we talk about expansion, what we're really doing, as I said before, is investing in proven success. And actually, as I read the commentary of various people who have talked about the airport expansion. Not many people dispute these facts because I think they're actually pretty hard to dispute. But I think they're the pertinent facts that would give us comfort about going forward in this way, going forward with the further development of the airport and the addition of additional capacity in the form of a third runway and existing facilities is important. And David Akers Jones, I think in his note in the South China Morning Post earlier this month, said, there's no doubt that a third runway at Chek Lak Kok is crucial for the future development of a broad-based economy for Hong Kong and the livelihood of our people. I think he's got it right on the nose. Let me move on then and talk about some other things. What about, because that leaves out the context of what's happening around Hong Kong. And although I think the decision has to be made by Hong Kong people thinking about what's good for Hong Kong, they have to consider what's going on around Hong Kong at the same time. And the fact of the matter is cities, airports, airlines, all companies all compete in some sense. They do. We know that from looking around. You see the competition between Hong Kong and Singapore for trying to attract people here, maybe even between Hong Kong and other parts of Asia, between Taiwan, even between parts of China. Everybody's trying to attract people to set up in those areas to create jobs. So there is competition. Look around us, though, specifically at airports, and you find certainly in China they're expanding their airports and their runways. In Bangkok, they'll be adding a third runway in 2016. In Seoul, which is actually a very big competitor for Hong Kong, they're talking about having five runways by 2020. The fact is, if we decide to slow down or not respond to the growth in demand, under no circumstances does that mean anybody's going to follow us. In fact, some of the people who are really trying to compete with Hong Kong, for the status, for the hub status that Hong Kong has achieved, would be delighted if we decided to take ourselves out of the race. So that is very important. We are on the top now, and I think we got there by pure effort, but only more of the same effort is going to keep us where we are, and that's a fact. Does it make sense to be a hub? And here I would say there has been some interesting commentary in some of the papers, and I've got a couple of quotes. Again, for me, I think hubs mean economic success, and hubs mean jobs for the people in that economy. Excuse me. A good hub has staying power. Look at the success of our financial services hub. Look at the success of our logistics hub. These are not things that have been happening for just a year or two. They've now been going on for a decade. And I think there's no indication that we can't keep building them if we keep building them. Right? You can't build them if you stop building them. So I think you can keep hubs going, and I think it's very important. An interesting factoid, when direct straits flights happened between Taiwan and the mainland, we were strongly expecting that the amount of Taiwan traffic that used to come through Hong Kong to go to China would sort of evaporate over a fairly short period. We had no idea, there were no statistics to tell us what would happen, but we expected really the worst. What's actually happened is illustrative, because although there was kind of a downturn in the early years, 2008, 2009, really last year the number of Taiwanese travelers coming to Hong Kong increased. It didn't decrease. And the number of people still coming to Hong Kong to transit into China with a stop in Hong Kong continues to increase. Why is that? I think that's because of the power of Hong Kong as a hub. There's still a lot of financial business for Taiwanese people done here. They found some great restaurants they like. They like coming to Hong Kong. The attractiveness of Hong Kong as a location continues to bring them through there, despite the fact that there are direct flights into China. So this is, I think, a great example of the power of a successful economy and a successful hub. Another fact, I think, is that once you've lost hub status, it's very hard to get back. It's hard to get, it's easy to lose. When you lose it, it's very hard to get back. And on this interesting point, Paul Zimmerman, in a note in the SCMP on 18th June, said, basically, hub traffic brings few benefits to Hong Kong. I disagree with that. I think the whole Hong Kong economy is based on being a hub in many different ways. And connectivity in financial services, in the professional services, trade and logistics, with aviation underpinning it, gives huge benefits to Hong Kong and the Hong Kong economy. And I really think this is a central issue. And I really think if we consciously decide to give up the hub status that we've worked so hard to achieve, we will suffer for that. We will suffer for that. Let me move on now and get to some of the technical points, because I know these will be of interest. Will the Hong Kong International Airport in fact be saturated at some point in the future, or would there be ways to keep the capacity going forward? Here, I think the facts are really true, that it simply will be saturated at a certain point. You know, somehow at airports, there's a balance between runways, between terminals, between parking places, between air traffic control. And what you try to do is to keep them all moving up together so that they all stay in balance. But you do not need to make extreme growth estimates to discover that with any sort of 4 to 5% growth, 5 to 6% growth in movements, in passengers coming through Hong Kong, which is completely within the range that we've been seeing for quite some time, and I don't think is hard to project forward, we are going to get there in the back half of this decade. I can't say for sure whether it's going to be 2017, 18, 19, or 20, but at some point in that time, I think we're going to reach our capacity, barring any sort of really strange change in the world economy. And everyone agrees with this. I mean, IATA, Airbus, Boeing, well, almost everyone, and I've got a couple of quotes on that from people who don't. Now, much has been done to increase capacity at the airport. There have been a lot of moves in ATC. In fact, one of the reasons that the Civil Aviation Department is building a new headquarters out at the airport is so they can install a new air traffic control system, which will link directly into the Zhuhai-Guangzhou system and will allow us to handle more movements per hour here in terms of airspace. The airport's authority is going to be building new gates on the airport to keep the capacity going. But even with all of that, we are going to run out of capacity at some point. Now, the quote here is that this was from Lau Nai Kung, also in the South China Morning Post, where he said, "I'm skeptical about optimistic official traffic projections. I don't think we're being terribly optimistic. I think we're being very much based on what we've achieved. Advances in modern communications technology have already made a lot of commercial traveling unnecessary." I mean, thank God that's not true. "Much more can be achieved quicker and cheaper through basically free internet video conferencing and file sharing." It's interesting, if you talk with people in business, they do a lot more internet file sharing and video conferencing, but interestingly, they continue to travel, and they travel even more than they did, because somehow none of that really replaces true connectivity of sitting together with your customers or your business partners. So for us, despite the huge advances in this over the last half decade or decade, business travel is up, leisure travel with people wanting to go and visit other places is also up, and in terms of, you know, railways or things taking away with that, they may do in China domestically, but they certainly haven't done in Hong Kong internationally. So I think pretty strongly that the fact is, yes, we will run out of capacity at the airport, despite the best efforts of everybody to get everything we can out of the current facility. Is ATC specifically an issue? ATC meaning air traffic control. Certainly, on this point, I would say there's both fact and myth. You know, looking backwards, ATC has been a controlling issue in terms of some elements of capacity in and around the Pearl River Delta. But at the same time, there are, I think, strong and proven plans to remove that constraint. And I would like to support, or here offer my support, to say I think China will get this done, and I think with Hong Kong's support, they will certainly get it done. Let me give you a little example of the kind of things that we can see in China, because they are very focused on removing constraints for air traffic control, even within China proper. Those of you who fly to Shanghai frequently would know a year ago we were suffering tremendous delays in Shanghai. Just about every flight would be delayed an hour or two, largely because of air traffic control regions, because all of the Shanghai routes, there was basically one route down the east coast of China to Hong Kong. We were pulling our hair out, frankly, trying to figure out what to do about this, because obviously we don't want passengers to be delayed, and having the aircraft delayed just meant the rest of the schedule was a mess, frankly. One day in November, I was looking back at the air traffic at the on-time performance figures, and I noticed that the on-time performance in China was suddenly way up. You know, we were doing, you know, some 65% on-time departures, and I thought, God, that's great. You know, a few months earlier, we'd been down at 10% or something, which was terrible. And I asked the person in charge of flight operations, what happened in China? What do we attribute to this? And he said, well, you know, it's off peak, it's summer, there aren't as many flights. But I said, but everybody's got airplanes and still flying them. And he said, oh, and by the way, what they announced in China last week was they reduced the horizontal separation, you know, from 20 miles to 10 miles. I think I've got that right. That means the distance between two airplanes on the same air route was reduced from 20 miles to 10 miles where you could do that. Now, if you understand that, what that means is they doubled the capacity of that air route in one fell swoop. Right? That is an enormous and huge move forward, which nobody predicted. I have to say, China is interesting in that they often don't tell us about those things. They just sort of happen one day. But you know what? They'd been working at it, they worked hard at it, and they got the result. Right? And the net of that is there is now more and more capacity on China air routes. And based on what I've seen, I feel very confident that the issues that apply down here in southern China, they will master. It is certainly a fact that, you know, forecasts for the two-runway airport that we built in the 1990s probably underestimated the growth. Okay? Now, of course, these forecasts were done back in the early 1990s, maybe even the late 1980s. So the forecasts themselves are 22 or 23 years old. I'm not sure anybody is that good at forecasting anything 20 plus years out. If you are, I have a job for you. So please see me after the briefing. But trying to, you know, within any sort of corridor of growth rates, if you say it could be between 3 or 5, project out a 3% growth for 20 years and project out a 5. It doesn't sound like that big a difference. Applied over 20 years, it becomes an enormous difference. Right, so any sort of corridor growth rates is very hard to pick going out. But I think that the point here is that, look, it's a good story. I mean, we did better than anybody thought we would do in terms of growing business, you know, to and from Hong Kong. And I think that's a success story, not a failure story. And when one looks at forecasts, I mean, who forecast in the early 1990s that the Hong Kong Stock Exchange would be the largest equity capital raising market in the world, you know, by 2009, 2010. I don't know anybody who did. Again, if anybody here did forecast that, I have a job for you. You know, please see me after the speech. Because being able to see things forward with that amount of clarity is tremendous. Okay? So I think the idea that, you know, you absolutely must have guaranteed clarity on 20-year forecasts, I think that's an impossibility. But I think as long as what you're looking at is reasonable based on what we have achieved, it's good enough to go forward with. And the honest answer is, we'll never know how accurate the forecasts are going to be until we get 20 years down the line and see what they've come to. But if anything, I would say that, you know, the potential for aviation in Greater Asia, you know, would bias you towards a higher level forecast rather than a lower forecast. If you talk to Boeing and Airbus at the moment, they will tell you all of their big plans for selling airplanes are in this part of the world. They are very confident in growth. And I have said publicly, and I still stand by this, that I think when the end of this decade comes and people look back on international aviation and travel, they will discover that the emergence of China as an international travel destination, an originator of international air traffic, will have turned out to be the story of the decade. Because the desire of Chinese people to go around the world and to see things and to travel for business is just huge and undeveloped. And I think when we look back, that will be the story of the decade. Moving quickly along to some other issues. Can't we use Shenzhen? What about just not doing things here? Let's just somehow find a way to get all our passengers up to Shenzhen rather than developing the Hong Kong airport. There's been quite a lot written on this one. And of course, when you see it at face value, it's a very attractive idea. Why can't we get all the benefit of more people coming to and from Hong Kong, supporting the hub, without having any cost? Now, of course, you know, is that realistic? Somehow, whatever the cost of providing facilities are, somehow the users are going to pay for it. So the idea that it will be free and we can stick somebody else with the cost, I mean, I would caution that because the world just isn't that forgiving normally. But I think really, as a concept, it's a myth that that is workable. And here's why. It is absolutely a fact that there are no examples of airports anywhere in the world actually supporting each other and working together in any sort of hub status way. There are loads of examples where it hasn't worked. Think Haneda and Narita, think Heathrow and Gatwick, think Mirabel and Dorval in Montreal, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. It just doesn't work. Why? A couple of reasons. First, and most importantly, I think, is that passengers just don't like changing airports. It's a huge inconvenience. And if there's another way to get where they're going without doing it, that's what they do. Think about it yourself. If you're going somewhere in Europe for your holiday, it could be shortly, and I come to you and say, great, tell you what, fantastic, I'll get you to Heathrow in great style on Cathay Pacific. All you need to do is take this really convenient bus over to Gatwick. You can find it outside Heathrow. It doesn't take very long unless there's traffic on the M4. And then at Gatwick, you can get your connecting flight into Europe. You will politely say, great, John, I'll give you a call back. And you'll ask your travel agent to find, can't I go via somewhere else where I don't have to change airports? It is just a demonstrable fact that customers don't do it. With the growth of Taipei and other places, there are other ways to get into China via Hong Kong. And if people have to change airports, they will find another way. And history is replete with examples of this. It is just a fact. Another fact, which is an important one, is that, look, Shenzhen itself is projected to be full, you know, or near capacity some point later this decade as well. They're about to open a new facility themselves, which actually in size and scope is not wildly different from what you're talking about here in Hong Kong. It involves more land reclamation and a runway at the outside of that. But once they've done that, you know, what next? To build another runway at the edge of that would actually take the runways probably a mile and a half out into the Pearl River Delta. Before long, you wouldn't need to build a bridge. I think the runways would bridge the entire Pearl River. But Shenzhen itself, you know, will have to invest in facilities. And this goes back to my point of the idea that somehow users will not have to pay for that if they invest in it, I think is false. Ultimately, the users, the customers, will have to pay the cost of the facilities somehow. That's an economic fact. Now, Jake Vandekamp did an interesting article, you know, following a lunch we had about the cost of convenience, i.e., surely there's a cost which would persuade people to go to Shenzhen and to be inconvenienced in some way, which he calculated at about $360 Hong Kong dollars, I think, if I have it here. $360 Hong Kong dollars. What I think he didn't take into account is the fact that to transfer all the Hong Kong traffic there eventually, or the growth in traffic that we won't get with a third runway, they'll have to build more facilities. Even if you grant that they may build them at half the cost we would build them, that would halve the $360, down to $180. And by the way, when they were talking about building a fast train from Hong Kong Airport to Shenzhen, the estimates for that were 40 to 50 billion Hong Kong dollars, which actually makes a whole Hong Kong Airport expansion for Eddie look pretty cheap to me, frankly, compared with one rail line. When you add that cost in, frankly, I think it's scratch. I don't think there's any difference in it at all. So when you look at the full costs of the argument, and again, Jake's not here to defend himself, but I'm sure he will at some point. I think when you look at the full cost of the facilities that will have to be built to bear the traffic, the logistics of getting people there and everything, I don't think there's really much in it, and I think that's a fact. A couple of more technical points. What about the cost on this one, and what about the finance of it? Now, I can't speak with great authority on all these issues because, you know, it will be up to the board of the airport authority to make the case for the investment. But just a couple of points from me. The first of which is that in aviation and connectivity, things like, you know, undersea cables across the Pacific, things that facilitate connectivity, just tend to be expensive. They just are. Though if you think that's expensive, try letting your economy be unconnected, and then you'll find what really expensive is. But they are. You know, Cathay has about 90 aircraft on order. The list price for those, we don't pay list price, but we get some discount. But the list price is about $180 billion for those aircraft. And we've probably not done yet in terms of adding to our order book. So, you know, we're making big investments here as well. And I'm not trying to somehow equate the two. The only point I'm trying to make is that aviation is an expensive game. And I can assure you these are real costs. My friend Peter Locke wrote a note to the South China Morning Post saying somehow if I finance them by selling and leasing back or something, then it wasn't really an investment. If that's true, I would encourage Stanley to finance the airport because then it won't be an investment, and we can do it easily. The point here is no matter how you finance it, it's still an investment, and aviation is an investment. The other pertinent facts, I think, on this case are, look, the current airport does return on its investment. It earns greater than a 5% return on the investment. So again, why would we see that it does that now, but we wouldn't see it possible in the future? And I think, of course, and this one may come up, of course, as the airport expands, as we expand, we will have more flights, which means we'll pay more in landing fees, we will pay more in parking fees, we will pay more in office rental and lounge rental, we will pay more passenger fees. Of course, as a user of the facility, we will pay. That's how it works. An investment is made, and recovery is made through charges to those who use it. We fully understand that and expect that to be the case. Ultimately, though, on the airport, I continue to say we're investing behind success. We're not investing in a new, untried, and risky thing. We're investing behind something that's already very successful. A couple other interesting points, if I may, on the environment. Now, this is a very important issue. And I would like to say in advance that I am not an accredited environmental scientist. But I think there are a few things here that are important. First of which is, look, I think it's a fact that choosing option two, which includes the third runway as part of it, will have an environmental impact. It's impossible to imagine reclaiming 650 hectares from the seabed and saying it won't have an impact. So we at Cathay have never said that and wouldn't say that because that would be false. We think it is a fact that there are plenty of ways to talk about the mitigation of what that will require. And actually, Stanley Hui himself has written an article on that, talking about setting up dolphin exclusion zones, monitoring the density and behavior of dolphins, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done on that. Cathay fully supports that work because it's important work. It's a fact that Eva Cheng has said, and I take Eva at her word, because you do not do so at your peril, I think, because she's very strong when she has things clear in her mind, that severe mitigation measures may be necessary, and that's important. So when one looks at this, to the extent there are environmental impacts, there will need to be mitigations. We understand that, and we accept that. An interesting fact where I think we have more knowledge about these things than others concerns noise, aircraft noise specifically. And I think the noise story actually is quite an interesting one. And the reason why is this. By selecting option two and building a third runway, which is actually further away from Tung Chung, further out into the harbor, you're actually going to reduce the noise that impacts on Tung Chung. You're actually going to change the flight path for arrivals and departures, which takes it further away from built-up areas like Ma Wan. And so the building of the third runway actually helps contribute to reducing noise, I think, in the populated areas. Another fact about the noise stuff that's been put out so far is that I think it's quite conservative. And I would point out here that in doing the kind of noise build-ups they've done, the airport authority naturally has to use information they have about current aircraft and the noise profiles that they generate. The point here is when you come to a third runway in the mid-2020s, you will be at least two generations further ahead of aircraft. And generally, each new generation aircraft is about 25% quieter than the previous generation. So the figures that are used now are for the current generation of 777s, A380s, A330s. The next generation is going to be the 787s and A350s that will be coming out towards the back end of this decade. By mid-2025, you're going to have another generation. So I think by then you're going to be somewhere in the 40 to 50% quieter range in terms of aircraft noise. And combine that, too, with the aircraft, with the runway being further away from the built-up areas, and combine that with the fact that after 2020, we're expecting there to be GPS-based navigation, which is going to allow tighter approaches into the airport. And I think what we're going to find at the end of the day, as a fact, is that the noise situation, as far as the airport, is actually going to be better, significantly better than now. As the airport authorities pointed out, just based on what they know now, with a three-runway operation, the noise generated shouldn't be any worse than the forecast for the two-runway operation. That's already a pretty good result. And I think going forward, because of new technology, we're going to do better than that. Now, on emissions, and here again, I'm not completely an environmental scientist. I would just like to make a couple of points. The first of which is aviation takes its contribution to carbon emissions very seriously. It is a fact that aviation is the only industrial sector in the world that has established for itself targets for carbon reduction. No other sector worldwide has set targets for carbon reduction. The targets that we have set through aviation, working through IATA and ICAO, which are the UN-sanctioned aviation bodies, are that emissions should be capped from 2020, okay, so carbon neutral growth from then on, and they should be halved by 2050. How is that possible? It's possible for a couple of reasons. First of which is technology. Again, each generation of engines and airframes gets more and more efficient, and not normally by 2%, but normally by 10 or 15%, A. B, looking forward, there is a huge development coming in terms of sustainable biofuels, right, which will be carbon offset against the carbon that we would generate by burning them, right? And this is an exciting developmental area which I take great interest in. Amazingly, you know, 10 years ago, none of this existed. And now we are on the verge of having sustainable biofuel crops that will not compete with food crops, and this is very important. You know, we saw the disaster of ethanol a while back where everybody went into ethanol, pushed corn prices up, and caused great poverty in the world. So we are talking about crops like jatropha and algae and things which do not compete with food-based crops, but which will generate biofuel in the future that we can burn and will make us net carbon neutral. Again, there is no other industry in the world that has those kind of ambitious targets and is doing that kind of development on eliminating their carbon footprint. And by the way, aviation currently is only about 2% of emissions, which doesn't sound like much, and it isn't, but we take it seriously and we want to do what we can to reduce it. So I know there are issues on emissions. They are broad and encompassing of many things. Certainly speaking from the aviation point of view, we are trying to do our best to deal with them. Let me close my comments now because I'd like to leave some time for questions. I think it's been a good debate thus far. I think most of the positions put forward have been interesting, they have been well-reasoned, and they have been based on pretty good facts, although not always, as in some cases I've pointed out. To me, the biggest fact is that the Hong Kong model works. And although it's never an easy decision to invest hard-earned money in expanding your infrastructure, I think it's not a hard decision to make either when you think about how the economy works together and how the international connectivity between our pillar industries and how aviation supports that have made Hong Kong the success that it is. I will shortly celebrate my 31st anniversary of coming to Hong Kong. And during those 31 years, the thing that's impressed me so much is that in Hong Kong, we have always made it happen. We have made progress happen. This is a huge strength of Hong Kong, the Hong Kong people, and the Hong Kong economy. I think it's the effort of Hong Kong people that made this barren rock the huge success that it is today. Obviously, Cathay Pacific is keen to play its role in the future development of Hong Kong. We have invested our own capital, we've invested our passion, our experience, and our determination as well, because we think it's really important. It is my hope that after a good debate and a good consultation period, the Hong Kong community will really come together over this important issue. This is not just an issue about should we make this investment or not. I really think this is an issue about what is the future direction of Hong Kong and how are we going to build a sustainable Hong Kong economy going forwards. And I hope that all the Hong Kong community will work together to find a way forward to keep Hong Kong in the position it is now, which is on top as one of the world's leading hubs, both in business terms and aviation terms, and to continue to make us the envy of those around us. So let me close and finish with a quote by, again, David Akers Jones from his article, which I thought, again, finished it off very nicely when he said, "The vision of those who created Chek Lap Kok as one of the world's key aviation hubs has provided us with a unique opportunity to greatly reinforce our economic future. Let us likewise have the vision to make that a reality. I think those are very good sentiments, which obviously I agree with. And on that note, I will close and take questions. Thank you.
Pass around the microphone. Please raise your hand and give your name and your organization, please. Have we found somebody? Anybody? In the corner?
Obviously, Cathay Pacific has an interest in the airport expansion, being the anchor carrier here. I'm wondering,
could you tell us who you are?
Oh,
please?
Sorry, Andrew Work, Canadian Chamber of Commerce.
Hi, Andrew.
Are you working with other airlines that are flying in here, and are you coordinating your efforts in terms of a response to the airport expansion? And if so, how is that unfolding?
Not indirectly, perhaps. I think there is an organization called the Board of Airline Representatives, the BAR. Which tends to talk about infrastructural issues and all that between all the carriers. And that body has been talking about trying to make its points in terms of its views on the future of aviation in Hong Kong, but basically no more than that.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Here, just down here.
Martin Savine, I'm an associate member. I agree with a lot of your arguments, but when you say the airport's a success at a 5% return, which has only been gradually built up to, I take it that Cathay would certainly not accept 5% as an acceptable return, maybe 15%. So aren't you really biased in your approach of essentially saying the taxpayers should invest at 5% so Cathay can expand its business and earn, say, 15%?
It would be worth, good point. Look, it'd be worth pointing out that return is just a pure financial return. That takes into account no benefit from the support of the infrastructure for the Hong Kong economy. And I think for me, it's impossible to imagine that the Hong Kong economy could be what it is today without the development of the airport, the roadways, the train, and the infrastructure that supports it. You know, if we were still at Kai Tak and completely maxed out, I just can't see that we would have achieved the things we've done in the economy overall. And the return doesn't include anything for that. It's just a pure financial return. But my point was to say, this was not a boondoggle of a big losing project, and you have to therefore justify it on all sorts of societal benefits. It returns a positive rate of return just as a pure financial investment of itself, which is better than a lot of infrastructure programs, and on top of that you get all the benefits for the support of the Hong Kong economy. So I think you can make a convincing argument that that's not bad. On your point about aviation, I would say some sage pointed out that the best thing for aviation over time would have been if somebody would have shot down Wilbur Wright on his first flight and stopped the whole thing from happening. Last year, on the biggest year ever in terms of profitability for aviation, the industry returned about 4% as a margin on sales. The forecast for this year is about 0.7% on sales. And any of you who are in a highly capital-intensive business would know it's pretty hard to make that all work with those types of margin numbers. But we do, somehow.
Okay, anybody else? Where's... Can you see anybody else, John?
We're in the back there and over
at
there.
At the back?
Mark Michelson from IMA.
Mark.
Thanks very much for that. You mentioned one area that actually I was at the AA presentation yesterday that also came up, and that's about not congestion in the on the ground but in the air. And you mentioned what the Chinese had done, and I'll take your word for it that the 10 miles is okay, 20 miles was too much. You know, some of us maybe are not experts, worry about narrowing it. But saying that, you know, a lot of the problem has been the Chinese government because of various other priorities they have, and especially the military, in those corridors. And you know more about this than me, but part of it's weather. If there's a weather problem, even if you're narrowing the corridors, that doesn't solve that. Are you working, not only Cathay, but are you confident that the Chinese government, are you working with the Chinese government, and will they help help support this growth as well, because, you know, above the ground sometimes as important as on the ground.
Yes, indeed. That's a good question. Well, look, I think the the air traffic control people in China, have got the message. Not specifically a Hong Kong message. I think everywhere in China, the growth in aviation has been, fabulous. I mean, much stronger domestically in China than even here. And they've been hard pressed to increase capacity for domestic aviation in China. And by and large, just about kept up with the growth. And that was quite a hard thing to do. But this is one where, you don't have full transparency, and it's not a case where they're going to write down and guarantee you that in 2030 they'll have X. But, through the interface with IATA, who works with them in China, and through the interfaces with the major Chinese airlines, I think there's a clear indication that positive work is ongoing. I know the CAD here works very closely with their mainland counterparts to make sure there are plans to have the air traffic control capacity that will be needed. And everything that I hear from them says, progress is inexorably in the right direction.
Okay, anybody else? Over there? Can you speak up, Enid?
I'll just shout. This is Enid from the Financial Times.
Oops.
Sorry, let me change to a different mic. You outlined very clearly the risks that our city faces if we don't go ahead with this expansion plan in terms of our status as a hub and so on. But what are the risks that face Cathay Pacific itself if this doesn't go ahead? What would be your plan B? Would you be relying more on, say, Shenzhen?
To tell you the truth, we haven't, we don't have a 2030 plan in Cathay yet. I mean, we try to have a 2013 plan in Cathay. In a business that changes itself so quickly, trying to even think a few years out is very difficult. But responding seriously to your question, if there's a certain point where, Hong Kong is going to be maxed out in capacity, we would have to adapt our strategy to deal with that. And as you've seen, and that could go in all sorts of different directions. Obviously, John Leahy from Airbus would be on the very next flight over to sell me as many A380s as he could possibly, deliver to me in fairly short order. But at the same time, and I think, what you've seen in London is an interesting case in point, where BA, British Airways, is now in a situation where they can't expand their business in London, and what they've done is to start investing outside. And Willie Walsh was quoted recently as saying, well, if we can't invest here, we'll invest in growth elsewhere. And I'm not saying that we would like to do that. We are, Hong Kong is our home. We're committed to Hong Kong. We've helped, I think, to build, Hong Kong Airport, along with the Airport Authority, into the success it's been. And most of our commitment is here. But if it's impossible to grow here 20 years hence, I don't know, we'd have to have a look at other things. But honestly, it's not anything that's on our radar at the moment.
Okay, we'll have two more questions. Down here?
My name is Mark Sheldon. I'm with the Chinese University of Hong Kong.
Hi, Mark.
You outlined very well for us the sort of grow or die scenario. And I think many folks here in Hong Kong, particularly in the local community, feel it's grow and die. That the growth has been so fast that now we have such terrible air quality that this is an incredible challenge for the local community. So my question to you is, in terms of this as your base and this as the jurisdiction where these political and investment decisions have to be made, what is your sense of how serious that environmental quality issue is here in Hong Kong? And then, given this political jurisdiction that seems to have very little political legitimacy here, how do you sort of see your way through this politically?
That is a really complicated question, I think, and I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to give you a great answer. But the way I see it, I think we would reject the premise that things are only at a breaking point, and therefore you need to somehow shut off from the rest of the world, or or stop somehow participating in the growth of the world. I mean, I think for us, we need to somehow do both. I mean, I think it's important, very important, that environmental considerations be a key part of this decision. As I outlined in my speech, I think there are some major issues that need attention as part of that, and I think they will come out as part of the consultation, and they'll certainly come out as part of the environmental impact statement that would need to be done if there's a basic decision to proceed to that stage of the investigation. But at the same time, I don't think it's an either or. I think we have to figure out how to do both and. And I think Hong Kong, in my experience, has always been great at figuring out how to do both and. So I think the either or choice is a false one, because I don't think it leads to a successful result at the end of the day. Would be my answer.
Okay, now final question, please.
There's a reporter there.
Reporter over there.
Hello, Mr. Slosser. I'm just the reporter of Now TV. I just want to ask, as the price of the oil decrease, it seems that it will help to decrease the cost, but will it help to push the valuations of Cathay Pacific shares? And do you think that the fuel hedging will affect the profit of Cathay Pacific? Thank you.
Not specifically on topic here, I guess. I'd just say, look, maybe just a general comment is that, fuel is the largest single cost we have in aviation these days. High fuel prices are bad, I think, just in totality. They're certainly bad for me as a cost issue. I think they're bad for the world economy. I think they, it leads to consumers having to pay more to put the petrol in their car or to heat their home, which means they're not going to spend on other things, not just travel, but on any sorts of things that aren't bare necessities. I think when the world economy is maybe a little bit weaker than anybody would like it to see, high oil prices are put the world economy in a certain amount of peril. And so, for Cathay, we think it's a great thing if oil's a little bit lower than it is now, and we think it will most importantly support the world economy, because when you come down to it, aviation is always strongly correlated with the world economic activity and world trade. Anything that makes world economic activity better and enhances trade is going to be generally good for everybody, and certainly going to be good for aviation, and anything that does the opposite would be bad.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much, Sean. I think we all agree that was most interesting. Thank you. I'm afraid he gets the FCC present.
Okay.